Hello and welcome to the No Code SaaS podcast. This is episode number 9, and actually it's quite a special episode because your three co-hosts are all sitting in the same room for the first time ever. In fact, we've only just met for the first time ever, and we are raring to go. So welcome, guys.
Hey, it's exciting.
Crazy times.
We're at a great podcast recording studio here in London, in Soho. Fantastic place. We'll maybe give a shout out to it at the end. But yeah, we're all set to go. We've got some great gear in front of us. We can see everything's recording nicely, and we'll just crack on. So let's introduce ourselves. James, why don't you go first?
Cool. So yeah, I'm James Devenport and a founder of an app called UserLoop, which is an app for Shopify merchants to help them collect customer feedback. It's all built in Bubble. I've been running it for about a year and a half. And yeah, it's been great fun to build.
Hi, I'm Kieran, aka No Code Life. My app is Yep.so, also built in Bubble. And it's a super fast landing page builder to help makers to test and validate their ideas.
And I'm Glenn, also known as The Flow Agency on Twitter. I am building No Code Kids, which is an educational platform and content for kids to learn in school, but also going to be in the home very soon. Watch this space. So yeah, trying to get No Code into our kids' heads early. So today's going to be a bit different, isn't it? So for the other episodes, what we normally do is go over what we've been doing for the past few weeks, give a bit of an update and what our findings have been, good stuff, bad stuff. But today we thought we'd have a little bit of a year in review, pull out some of the interesting things, some gratitudes, and just really just let everybody know, you know, what we do. I think that's important. We've had questions like that already from our audience, so it's a good opportunity to do that. So I don't know who wants to go first. I'm happy. Yeah, you're nodding. I'm happy to go first, right? So I've broken this down a little bit, and hopefully people find this interesting. But for me, I've broken it down into, over the course of the year, I work with clients. That's really my bread and butter, how I actually survive. And I want to actually shout out to suppliers and partners as well. And then lastly, just, you know, fellow no-coders and collaborations that I do as well. So I'm going to quickly rattle through these. So clients-wise, my first big shout-outs to Roger Farley. Hi, Roger, if you're listening. We've been working for a while now on alwaysinvert.com and various other projects. Roger's a very talented person who is amazing in business, but also really gets no code. So we've just enjoyed learning a ton of stuff together, building lots of different things. We're testing different group work models out to see what might work with that. Lots of stuff going on with Roger. So big thanks to Roger. I've also worked with a company called Reboxed that are trying to sort of make sure that we're recycling our phones and other devices and not just buying new all the time. So they're doing really well, and they're based in Shopify. So I do a lot of the back-end processes with them and trying to make them run smoothly. Go Adventures is a recent client. I'll just give a quick shout out to them because it's my opportunity to build my first proper no-code native app for the stores using Bravo Studio and Figma, which is a really great tool. I want a quick shout out to Cochise, who I've been working with, many and various individuals who recognize the value in no-code coaching sessions, whether it's just to check their direction or to level up as quickly as possible. So thank you to them. And lastly, but most importantly, really, in a way, is the schools and students I've worked with this year. Very grateful to them for their early belief in no-code kids. We got the MVP off the ground together, and they really helped to give direction to the initiative. So huge thanks to them. So apart from that, I think really it's just quickly on suppliers. You know, Webflow, 90% of what I do is with Webflow. So I just really wanted to say thank you to Nelson. We did a community live stream together. It was fantastic to be able to do that with them. So Vlad, Nelson, Emily, who's the director of community there, big thanks to her. And also huge thanks to them for our No-Code Kids community grant, which was issued very recently. And we're just more than grateful for that kind of recognition. And as well as them, you know, we've got Xano, great backend tool we've talked about on the podcast already. I recommend everybody to go and have a look at that. Big shout out to Prakash and the team. Make for automation and integrations. Airtable for just being able to launch anything quickly and easily. And just about everybody gets on with Airtable, which is a joy. And again, lastly but not least, FinSuite and Wizd, because everything that Joe and the team are doing there, from client first and attributes to Wizd version 2, the team have just enabled a whole new avenue for many of us to build high quality software visually, quickly and easily with their tools. So huge thanks to them. Yeah. And then apart from that, it's just the no-code community as a whole, no-code Twitter, all the collabs that I've done the past year. Obviously, Max Haining work with. We've got Marcel, Brendan, Jeremy, we've been learning Wizd with. And yeah, just no-code Twitter for making learning and sharing a real pleasure. So that's just about me wrapped up. Oh, and of course, you too. So big thanks to you for making our first podcast, all three of us, our first foray into podcasting, really enjoyable. We hope we've added some value to our listeners' lives. So that's sort of my quick rundown of the year. I'll hand over to Kieran.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Well, this year has really been the year of Yep. I think I started it, and well, I launched it like a year ago. So it's gone not like a rocket ship that I'd probably hoped, but it's definitely doing better. If I take myself back a couple of years, I would never have dreamed of having like a SaaS that makes like $500 or $600 MRR, whatever I'm at now. And that is all thanks to Bubble, really, for making the platform that enables me to do this. Also, as you know, recently I took the big step of leaving my paid salaried position and becoming a full-time freelancer. And since I did that, like, I had loads of people just reach out to me to give me opportunities or to just offer support or just to be there if I needed a sounding board for ideas. So that's a lot of people from No Code Twitter, you know who you are. And then there's organizations like Buildcamp, Dev. I've been going through their process, their like interview process for becoming an Air Dev. So, which is, I have to say, is the most arduous interview process I've ever done, but it just shows the quality of their people. And I'm glad to say I got accepted finally. And yeah, everyone else that's building with Bubble who's really helping to lift the community, and of course, you guys as well.
Yeah, no, I think I'd echo a lot of the points both of you said. You know, I'm super grateful for Bubble as a platform just being available. You know, I think it makes products like ours possible to exist at all, you know, through radically reducing the cost to develop and increasing the speed. And, you know, it really, really is a game-changing platform. And the whole community around it, you know, everyone on the forum and on Twitter, and it's just so supportive. I'd also kind of give a shout out to the Shopify dev ecosystem. Over the last year, I've kind of got more embedded there and attended a few of their events. And again, super supportive. And Shopify's documentation is just awesome. So that's been kind of really instrumental for me in kind of growing the app over the last year. Yeah, in terms of my application this year, I think it has been quite a game-changing year for it, really. I kind of came into the year with just starting out monetizing it, really. At the start of the year, I only had two plans, which was free and $9.99. And early in the year, I did quite a big strategic shift in the app, I guess, and really increased the prices of the tiers, because, you know, I've seen the more value that people were getting out of it. And that's really been a bit of a game changer, really, for me in terms of what it's now earning month to month. It's up to a couple of thousand MRR, which I couldn't have imagined. Nice. At the beginning of the year. So that's been really, really exciting. And just all the merchants who are using it as well. You know, I'm super grateful for all the merchants, large and small, who are using the app. You know, I talk to them all pretty much every day about how they're getting on with it, and they've really steered how the product has developed. You know, when it first launched, it barely did anything. You could ask one question, and that was it. Now you can have multiple questions and tons of other things you can do with it. So that's been really fun to build. The other community I would kind of give a shout out to as well is all the guys at Buildcamp, as I've really enjoyed getting to know them more. So Gregory and James. I also love some of the products they've been putting out. So their Frames framework, I've used that a little bit, and that's been really cool. And I love everything they're doing. And again, No Code Twitter. So yeah, it's been, you know, non-stop support. And I feel like we all support each other on there as well. But I do still feel like we're at the beginning of the whole no code hockey stick. You know, you look at all the figures coming out of all these platforms, how fast they're growing every year. And it really does feel like, you know, the movement is gaining momentum. So it's really exciting to be involved with it.
That's fantastic. Thank you for bringing up that word movement, James, because I think it's something that's easy to forget when this becomes a bit of a job and you're working with it every day. It's tempting to think that this has just always been around and this is just still so new. And people are coming into it all the time at the top of the funnel, if you like, and just saying, how do I learn no code? How do I start no code? We've got to remember there's still so few people really even in this community. But the ones that are here, yeah, really, really dedicated to each other and what they're trying to build. So great gratitudes. I think we're all, obviously, the three of us, really, really grateful, even just to be sitting here and having this conversation about no code and sharing it with people. I think it's a real privilege that we can do that. I would like to bring in our sponsor, our first ever sponsor at this stage, because again, a gratitude thing. We put out a call to see whether anybody would be interested in sponsoring us, and we got quite a few replies. So, Kieran, is it okay? I can hand over to you to explain who our first ever sponsor is.
Well, I'm gonna throw it right back at you both and say, come on, guys. There aren't really any no-code businesses that make money, are there?
Let's find out.
I mean, you must see this question quite a lot. I've seen it a few times by people on Twitter who want to start a fight. Normally, they're coders. But thankfully, our friend Kat Risen has put together a website where you can actually see all the no-code businesses that are making money or that have exited. And it's one of the few newsletters that I actually open every time and read, because these are stories that are so achievable for people like us. They're really not that far off. Some of them have built, you know, businesses that they sold using just Airtable and Softr. They're just directory sites, and then suddenly they get an offer and they've sold it through MicroAcquire or other means. So I think it's just a fantastic resource for the community to have, so we can see these stories. And the website is nocode-exits.com. So every week there are new success stories added, and she's got 2,800 subscribers already, and that's going up exponentially from the looks of it. And yeah, it genuinely is a really, really good newsletter that I read every one of, and I can't say that for many newsletters, if I'm honest.
That's for sure. And it's a short newsletter as well. I think that's the other thing. It's not a really long one. It's a quick read. You just one interview per newsletter. You just get to find out more about that person, their successes. So Kat's doing an amazing job there. Yeah, so website one more time, Kieran, no code?
nocode-exits.com.
Okay, excellent. Be sign up for the newsletter there. And thank you, Kat, for sponsoring this episode, our Christmas episode, if you want to call it that.
Kat. And if you're looking for a first edition to read, I did an edition with Kat, actually, where I went through the whole creation of my app, User Loop, and the previous one that I sold. And we've kind of talked about the whole thing. But yeah, an absolute not to miss newsletter. So get subscribed. It's absolutely awesome. And it's really inspirational as well. You know, it just shows you what is possible here. You know, it's not no code, despite what some of Twitter says. It isn't a toy. It is a serious tool for building, you know, a scalable and profitable business. And this is where you're going to find out how to do it and who's done it before, and get inspired to do your own.
Yeah, nice. That inspiration thing's important, isn't it? You need to be able to see what other people are doing, because the software is so good now. No code software just looks like any other software, doesn't it? You wouldn't know the no-code tools that we used behind it. So Kat lays this all out, the stacks there, isn't it, I think, in each episode. And, you know, it's important to be able to look at that and say, well, if they can do that, I can do that. And why aren't I doing that? Because, you know, look how quickly you can actually put something together, build up that MRR and just get some traction, and then possibly sell very quickly if that's what you're looking to do. Whereas a lot of us are in it for the long game, you know, we're not looking to sell quickly, but it's good to know that you've got some kind of exit plan should you ever need to or want to in the future. So yeah, well done, Kat. Cool. So next segment, I thought that we would have a bit of fun with next year. So what are your thoughts or predictions for the year ahead? And I'm thinking specifically here about no code, not just in general. And just try and think about what might happen as a result of what's been changing recently online, Elon and Twitter to one side, although you never know. Yeah, where's no code going in this next year? Let's because we've got some experience to share. What do you think, guys?
I mean, I can see a lot more investment coming into the no-code ecosystem, to the platforms. So I think we've seen some decent-sized funding rounds this year going into them. And I would expect there to be even more next year. And, you know, we may even start to see some kind of consolidation or acquisition in the space as well, which is kind of nerve-wracking. You know, like there's obviously going to be a lot of people who are interested in some of these no-code platforms, because they are, you know, at this inflection point now where they're really scaling. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. I think one of the biggest things I'm expecting to grow actually over the next year is the community around no-code. Because I think when you first, and I think probably it was the same for us all when we first start using these tools, you're just like, wow, how do I get started with this? It's kind of overwhelming. And that's really where community and education comes in. So, you know, I'd love to see more of a platforms hosting meetups or conferences, more educational content online, more community-based stuff. And I could definitely see a lot of that happening next year. And in the tools themselves, I think, you know, if we just look back over the last year, the power of all these tools has grown unbelievably, and the features they're adding, they are like relentless in shipping improvements. So I'm expecting the platforms that we use, so Bubble and Webflow, maybe more on Bubble side, is to get even better at handling large amounts of data. Because I think, as we've spoken a bit before, you often have to turn to another platform like Xano if you have a large volume of data. But really, I'd expect Bubble to solve that at some point and not have people have to move off their platform when they hit scale, because it's not ideal. That I think, you know, I've heard them say a lot, they really want to be the platform that people scale with and, you know, be able to provide service for that. So yeah, those are a couple of things I've been thinking about that I could imagine happening over the next year.
Yeah, just sort of deepening into the investment that's already been made. It just making sure that it's lots of improvement and, as you say, scaling the product that needs to scale in order to allow other people to scale. I think that's a big thing, isn't it? So huge investment from their side to do that, probably. But
yeah, and you know, the one that, you know, that sticks out is for me is that it's from the outside, it seems like Bubble and Microsoft are getting very close. You're seeing more and more Microsoft bundling Bubble with their startup program, which is awesome. But yeah, also kind of, you know, when we are so invested on a platform like Bubble, it also does make you a bit nervous, because you just don't know what might be in store with an acquisition or anything like that. And, you know, we're so dependent on those platforms. It's not like we can just move our applications elsewhere. You know, we really want them to be successful. But, you know, the thing about those big no-code platforms, I do believe they really, really care about us as developers and users. And I'm not worried about it. I think there is going to be something like that coming down the road. But I trust the founders that they're, you know, they actually have our best interests at heart, and any decision that gets done will, you know, we'll do okay out of. But it's one on the radar for sure.
you were kind of shaking your head a bit there, Kieran. Were you worried about that as a possible prediction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly nervous about a future that involves change, because I really like the way things are at the moment. I know that makes me sound like a Luddite, but yes, I'm nervous about Microsoft potentially, you know, taking over Bubble and then, you know, a year later shutting it down because they've launched their own thing. But at the same time, I'm confident that the people that have built serious apps on Bubble will be able to rebuild elsewhere, even if your app is complex. Someone asked me on Twitter the other day, should I build my MVP with Bubble and then assuming I'm going to have to rebuild it with code when I get traction, or is that just a huge waste of time? And I was just thinking, well, firstly, whether or not you're going to get traction is a massive question, and it's actually very unlikely. So yeah, don't go with code to start with. Go with Bubble. And then secondly, I was thinking most MVPs that you build with Bubble, with code as well, when you get to a point where you have traction, your vision of the product will have completely changed from what it was initially, because you'll have real customers telling you, oh, we don't want this and that. And actually, you'll probably want to do a rebuild and be grateful for an excuse to do it. So if Bubble went down tomorrow and I had to rebuild Yep in another platform and learn it from scratch, I wouldn't be that disappointed. I'd be actually quite happy to rebuild a lot of parts of it. And actually recently, I have almost built a clone of it just because I wanted to make a course on how to build a kind of page builder SaaS product. So I took all the learnings from that I've had over the last year of the things I did wrong in the way I structured Yep, and I built a far superior platform. It's not as complex, but it is structured a lot better and it's a lot easier to maintain. And so I'm kind of like wishing, you know, I could do a rebuild every year and with the new knowledge I have and make things better. And I think with no code, that's not, you know, a crazy thing to say. I'm just going to rebuild the whole app from scratch. And I know James Useloop is pretty complex by now, but I'd be interested to know how long you think it would take to rebuild it based on the Bubble knowledge and skills you have now.
I'd be really, really in trouble, I think, if Bubble disappeared, because it is at the point where it is super complex. And I think that probably the next platform that it would have to go onto would be a coded platform. At the moment, I can't see any other no-code platform that would be able to do what I've done with it. So I could imagine the next part being code. But I think it's a really interesting point you raise about the, you know, building MVPs in no-code and, you know, is that a waste versus code? But I would say to everyone, you know, I've been involved with countless startups, and probably every startup that's built in code is refactored an unbelievable number of times anyway. It's just part of growing a scaling company. You know, what you've built 3 years ago isn't going to last. So why not build your first version in no code? And, you know, you're not really going to have tons of tech debt, if we're honest, in no code, because like you say, you can rebuild the whole thing. It's, you know, the speed of iteration is so fast. There is just no reason not to do that first version in no code. The only reason I can really think of is if there is something really, really technical or, you know, very custom in the UI but that can't be done in no code, maybe something maybe ML related or 3D or VR or something like that. But for most SaaS applications like we're talking about, there is, you know, there's no reason not to start it on no code because you're going to refactor it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the prediction, people will be doubling down on using no code for MVPs, for not worrying so much about scalability. Let's just, you know, really commit to these tools. Bubble in particular we're talking, but for me, Webflow the same. And the infrastructure will keep getting better and better and better. These companies are very committed, not just because they're getting the funding, but as you say, it's an industry that's growing very rapidly. And in a time where we're you know, in recession, they have a really great opportunity during that time to cater to people's needs that are looking to either build for themselves or start a side business or even leave their jobs or losing their jobs. So it's a very ripe time, I think, for the no-code suppliers. So totally behind that as well. I don't think, I'm not going to predict the bubble will be bought out this coming year. I think it'll stay as it is. Let's hope so. I know that Webflow won't be. Don't hold me to that, anybody that's listening. But honestly, I can't see how Vlad and the team would ever decide to sell Webflow. That just wouldn't make sense. They're just going from strength to strength. They've put a huge amount of investment into their infrastructure over the past, well, few years, but you're now starting to see the dividends from that. So they've rebuilt basically the core from the ground up. And therefore, things like a marketplace where apps can be installed in that marketplace and you can connect tools a lot more quickly, a lot more easily, is around for the first time, including being able to sort of dynamically link your native React app to your Webflow design, which is just blew people's minds when they talked about this at the conference. This idea that a designer can not just design it initially, but carry on designing the app in Webflow, and behind the scenes, that's dynamically connected to React Native code. So the developer can carry on working, the designer can carry on working in the tools that they love, and it just works seamlessly together. I mean, that's just magic. So yeah, things like that are just going to see all of this go from strength to strength. So I'll give you one prediction from me. I think that just because of the explosion of OpenAI and ChatGPT and everything over the past month or two, I think OpenAI in particular, but other AI ML/ML models are going to make their way into SaaS products. I think they're going to be the engine behind products, and people will be monetizing like that. I mean, we've obviously seen things like the avatar.me, you know, the avatar one, and other ones that have made huge amounts of money, but that they were coded solutions. You know, I'm thinking about no code solutions, and I'm sure Kat will be on the lookout for these if she's not already. So being the backbone to a SaaS product and having a subscription model on top of that, if you can also automate parts of that, I mean, what an amazing product that would be. One I saw the other day, and I can't say whether it was a no-code one or not, but it was somebody advertising, in quotes, original illustration work, kind of unlimited original illustration work for a subscription. And I'm thinking, well, AI-generated art is original. People are allowing that term, you know, in, but is that graying the area? Is it blurring the boundaries quite a bit? But you could launch a business doing something like that quite easily, I think. And as long as you've got decent prompts and you know how the way these models work, you could build a business on these AI platforms quite easily. And they automatically have APIs available to them out of the box. So there's no need to try and do, you know, silly workarounds. You work with that platform. So I think that's definitely a huge one to look out for next year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was playing around with OpenAI for Yep. I was just seeing if I could type in a one-line pitch for a landing page and it would generate all the content, and it did a great job. You know, maybe not as, obviously not as good as a professional copywriter, but certainly as good as I could do myself. So, and that really didn't take long at all. I haven't implemented it yet because I'm just working out how to pass through it. But yeah, it was very impressive. And that's not even the ChatGPT. It's like the older, what do you call it, continuation model or something. But it's, yeah, it was decent and it was easy to do with just a simple API call.
Yeah, I think that's a great prediction. I've been experimenting with it as well with the OpenAI in Bubble, and yeah, super easy to integrate. Like, the results seem amazing. And the other kind of unexpected use of ChatGPT that I wrote about on Twitter recently is that I found it really, really useful for doing, like, actually helping with tasks in Bubble. So, like, for example, importing an API into the API connector, I would give it an example of how that bubble requires that to be formatted with closed brackets and stuff, and it actually writes the API connector value for you, ready to put in Bubble. It's absolutely amazing. It's such a time saver. Helping with reformatting JSON and things like that. If you're not familiar with coding and you need to do a bit of JSON in your app, ChatGPT can pretty much do it for you. So, like, there are a couple of different ways it will make a difference. And I think it is going to blur the lines between what a coded and not no-code platform is. Because, like, we've already seen, I think GitHub is integrated OpenAI and it's doing lots of autocomplete on code, and I think VS Code maybe has it as well. And, you know, does that then start to make code no code? Because technically it's writing itself a lot of the time. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that develops, because it's going to challenge a lot of the, you know, the orthodoxies around, oh, no code is low power, not fit for purpose, and it can't scale it. Well, you know, pretty much everything is going to be using it to some extent. I think, like, it's you know, you're going to be at a disadvantage not to be using that stuff.
I've just been sitting here listening to that, thinking, how exciting would it be to not just have GitHub's Copilot, like, writing code for you, but as a true AI assistant as you're building out your no-code app, and even if there's code involved, and it's sort of there helping you along and saying, right, at this point you need to do this, at this point you need to do that, almost like a tutor, or checking that you've done it properly as you're going along. I mean, that would be an incredible thing to happen, wouldn't it? And I'm just thinking, you could even have a course written by OpenAI. You feed it in all the things that you want it to create, but it creates that course material for you, and it probably could create stuff in sometimes better than you can, as you said. So you're then selling that on as a paid course, perhaps. Huge opportunities, you know, and that's not copyrighted. You know, nobody's saying you can't do that. You can use it, I'm assuming anyway, for commercial gain. So yeah, anyway, big one to look out for. Can I do another one?
Yeah.
So we've got this, as I said, we've got this interesting turn of events really now with Webflow, in that Webflow designers, I predict this coming year, a lot more Webflow designers are going to become Webflow devs. So whether they want to call themselves that or not, that's up to them. But they're going to be diving into creating web apps, maybe even for the first time ever in their lives. So they're used to doing UI UX type stuff, handing over to developers, and now they're getting to the point where they can do this for themselves. So they might not do it in their job immediately. Their job is, say, a UI UX person, but they might start building things on the side and testing out their skills that way, and then ultimately then start to go for jobs where they are more of a front-end developer. And the tools like Wizt version 2 is out to enable them to be able to do that. And all they really need is just some core concepts in web app development that the three of us have learned over time, whether it's database design or APIs and calls and things like that, and JSON. But once you've got that under your belt, then you could do pretty much anything. So one of my predictions, yeah, with 2023, is definitely more web designers becoming more like web devs. So I don't know whether that applies in the Bubble world, because of course you're already sort of devving in the Bubble world. But yeah, just interested in your thoughts on that one.
No, I can definitely see that coming, and I think the lines have been blurring for a while, haven't they? You know, even in you know, seeing how tools like Figma, you can import a Figma file into Bubble and it effectively then it becomes an application without logic and you're just adding the logic. So yeah, I can definitely see that line starting to blur because, you know, I think a lot of the time the designers themselves know the best decisions about how something should be implemented. And a lot of the time communication can get lost between the designer and the developer. So anything you can do to minimize that loss and, you know, for the designer effectively to be implementing it themselves, because the tools are so streamlined now, then it's like, why wouldn't you do that? I think, you know, from a designer's perspective, I think it's really empowering for them because they have 100% control over the finished product and there isn't anything left to, you know, that's going to get lost in communication about how an animation works or a bit of functionality works, because they literally can do the whole thing. So yeah, I could do, I think that's a great prediction.
I put a note here on that point actually to say that a designer's skills in user interface and user experience means that the web apps they build are likely to be more usable and successful than apps built by developers. And it's a contentious issue, but as you say, nothing's been lost in translation. They can actually make changes more readily, more quickly as well, because they know both sides, if you like, if there are sides anymore. And so I think that skill set is just going to expand and they're going to be really in demand. I think where designers have felt a little bit left outside of the loop when it comes to the development bit, and as you say, can even be disappointed or frustrated by what gets created, yeah, they'll have a lot more control of that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing designers get empowered that way.
Yeah, I mean, design is so important in an app, and I see tons of talented Bubble builders who just build really ugly apps, which unfortunately does affect, you know, people wanting to use them, and certainly, you know, they wouldn't be able to get funding for an app that didn't look up to scratch. Whereas certainly places like Twitter, people who can do good design, you just see them, their apps just take off, even if perhaps it's quite similar to another app that does the same thing. Mm-hmm. If it looks good, it just makes a huge difference in usability and also people's willingness to give it a try, and also how viral your screenshot or video goes. So I think it's, yeah, the designers that can, you know, adjust their brain more towards the building side of things are going to do fantastically well. And I think you're going to see anyone that can combine building and design and marketing perhaps are just going to be unstoppable. Unfortunately, I suck at marketing. I'm not very good at design. So those are things I'm trying to improve on. But yeah, people who can do it the other way around, I think, are going to do fantastically.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's maybe not always the front of people's mind is that UX is unbelievably hard. Like, people dedicate their entire career to mastering it. It is difficult. And, you know, it can be very tempting when you're building with a no-code builder is just to chuck everything on a page. But you really do need to consider how the user is actually going to use this product. It has to be beautiful. It has to be easy to use. It has to be functional, you know, if you want it to be successful. Because otherwise, it's a competitive market. And, you know, all these startups that are funded and have got UX people to make it look great, you know, they're going to beat you unless you do give it proper consideration. It's, you know, something I struggle with as well, is like, trying to keep your app as simple as possible and as easy to use as possible is actually unbelievably difficult, because a lot of the time it's just deciding about what not to put in. Because the easy thing would be to put in millions of toggles for every single thing, but actually that's not always the best thing for the user, and it's better if you can do something more complicated on the server side to make it simple. But yeah, it's an exciting time, because it's bringing more people with those skills into being able to implement and build stuff.
And maybe with that, the designers and the developers who have always had that little bit of a divide actually do get that much more closer together. So they get to work more closely together with these tools side by side, as opposed to, I'll do this first, then hand it over, and then it comes back, and then it's 2 months, 3 months later, it gets changed. I think if the tools are right and they're set up correctly, like I was describing earlier with Webflow and their connection with you know, React native code, you're just trying to facilitate that process a lot more, and then both sides can learn from each other. You know, the developer's quite happy to learn some of the skills and from the designers, and vice versa. So I think that's very exciting. It's been long in the coming, and hopefully, yeah, we're getting closer to that. I had just one more prediction, then I'm happy to sort of open up to anything, but this one's true to my heart. What I've been learning a lot over this past year, I feel like 2022 has been a real foundational year, like laying lots of foundations for lots of people, not just me. But it feels like everybody's been getting ready for a surge in something, you know. And the one thing I've been really watching carefully is this idea that remote learning programs, like the one we deliver digitally with NoCode Kids, they're going to be on the sharp rise. I think kids are looking for more fun, exciting ways to engage digitally, not just through gaming and through consumption. And at the same time, they've become a bit disillusioned by the school system and the fact that it's not obviously keeping up with what's going on in the cutting edge bit of the real world, which is where we are. So that curriculum, you know, is holding them back in a way. So I think with remote learning initiatives where they can access them either directly at home or with the forward-thinking schools will really open up a whole new world to these kids. That's why NoCode Kids exists in the first place. But I'm reading a lot more these days about how this is the future. It's not just something that might happen. It's like inevitable. You know, it's going to have to go this way. My own daughter is enrolled on a program by a school called Synthesis, I may have mentioned before. And the way they've come at it is they're teaching kids all about teamwork, collaboration, communication, problem solving, disputes, you know, resolving disputes, all kinds of stuff which we all have to do in the real world. And they're not necessarily taught that particularly well in school. They're not given the opportunity. And this particular one comes at it from a gaming point of view. So it gives them problems in the shape of games. And they can go in and they have to figure it all out themselves. They're given a few pointers and then they're left to it. And of course, they then have to rise to that challenge. And they do. It's a natural instinct for a child to do that. So they rise to the challenge, they solve the problems, they do it together. They might lose or they might win against another team, say, but they learn in the process. And that kind of learning is really satisfying to a child, and it's what they're not getting enough of at school. So that's my big prediction, is not necessarily just in 23, but beyond that, there's going to be a big surge in these kinds of initiatives coming out. And the more the better, as far as I'm concerned, the more choice the better. I think that we just need to come in. So we're concentrating on no code. Other initiatives will come along like this one that concentrates on more sort of human skills that they're going to need when they're in the big bad world. And yeah, I'm just really excited for it. So that's why I do what I do and why I'm really excited about 2023. I know that Webflow's community grant that they've issued is going to go straight into this program, making it as good as it possibly can be for these kids, making it exciting, make it about problem solving and not just spoon feeding information. So that's my little prediction there. Yeah, just thoughts on that.
No, I can totally see that. You know, we need more people in learning no code and being able to do it. So the earlier people can get involved with it, the better. As you know, I wish this technology had been around when I was in school, because, you know, my IT education was effectively Microsoft Office, it felt like, a lot of the time. Whereas I'd much rather be building a fun app using no code tools. So yeah, I think the earlier and more people can get involved with it, the better.
Someone came to my front door the other day, just trying to get me to donate to something. She was 19 and she said, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I guess I'm an app developer." And she said, "Wow, that's really unusual, isn't it? That's quite rare. I don't know anyone that does app development." And I was thinking, oh my God, like 19, I thought you'd all be developing apps by that age, but apparently not. Yeah, I mean, I think it's inevitable that curriculum will move too slowly given just the pace of things, and it must take them years to decide changes to curriculum. So it is inevitable, and kids are going to want to go elsewhere to learn, and rightly so, and they're going to go online, and obviously the courses are all going to be delivered online, not in person. So it's, yeah, absolutely going to be a massively growing space. And I think they're going to be almost more open to it than adults will be. So, yeah, anything that can make that more accessible and more interesting for them is going to be very well positioned. And I think No Code Kids is going to definitely do that. And actually, I should see if I can help you out in any way, because, yeah, I'm super passionate about, like, getting kids excited about it. All my friends who are teachers, I keep offering them, "Can I come to your school and like talk about no code and stuff in an assembly?" And they're like, "Are you sure? The kids might make you cry." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll still do it, but I might cry."
I love that. I'd like to be there when you cry on stage. They're not as intimidating as I thought they would be. When we went into the classroom digitally, we thought they'd be a rowdy bunch, you know, but they're generally not. They really want to learn, and they're in sponge mode at school, right? Secondary schools. And they just want something that feels good, something that can allow them to be creative, just something else, you know, because I think when they get to that GCSE level, the sense that I'm getting, and it's definitely from my daughter, is that it's all a bit staid, it's all a bit predictable, it's all a bit boring. And yeah, they need these things to break them out of that and remind them that they have a brain, a mind, they can use their initiative, they can get things wrong, and that's totally fine. In fact, it's really good. There's so many things that, and it's not the school's fault, you know, it's the pressure for the schools to actually deliver the curriculum that has been designed is huge. And there's not a lot of room for doing it differently. So you can't blame the schools, and the teachers are making it as interesting as it possibly can be. But I just think what they're learning is a bit stuck in the past. So yeah, really, really exciting. I don't know whether we'll bring AI into it or not. I'm tempted to create a module written by OpenAI, not tell them, and then at the end of it, tell them that was written by OpenAI, just something like that, you know, just to sort of mix it up a bit, or just get them to create an app with it, and just really have fun. And, you know, I just like this idea that they're laughing in the classroom as they're building this stuff, and the teachers are loving the fact they're laughing at, you know, that really does something. So yeah, those are my predictions. Have you guys got anything else to add to those that you think might be hot in 2023?
Well, the only one I thought of apart from those is I noticed that Zapier have added some new functionality, which made me think it could become the ultimate no-code tool. So I haven't really looked into it, but my understanding is they basically added a site builder to Zapier. So before, it was just you can plug in other services and tools and plug them into your own site, WordPress or whatever, and have the outputs shown there and stuff like that, and it was super cool. But now you're going to be able to build a website with Zapier, and obviously it can take data that you've piped in via Zapier from elsewhere. You can also have forms and things, so you can, I'm assuming there's going to be a database in Zapier that you can send all your data to. So it's gone from being kind of the tool that connects all the other tools to being something that on its own could do everything. And that is, you know, that it sounds like it could be the ultimate no-code tool.
Prediction.
And I think it's particularly exciting because it's Zapier, because I don't know about everyone else, but I feel like Zapier is a gateway drug to no code. It's probably the first no code tool I ever used years and years ago when it came out, because it does introduce all those concepts of workflows and things like that so well. So yeah, I'm super excited to see what Zapier do with that. But yeah, as a platform for getting more people into no code, from that alone, it's like the leader in that, I think, isn't it? Like the number of you people who use it, who probably wouldn't ever even call themselves a no-coder or know what a no-coder is huge. So yeah, it's exciting to see them build that platform out.
Yeah, good one. Yeah, definitely. Having moved away from Zapier to another platform to make years ago, I feel like I've been missing out a little bit on some of the progress that Zapier's made. And it's maybe a little bit bias that I'm not doing enough with Zapier on the No-Code Kids course, where I really should be, because it, as you say, it is that entry level, I don't want to use the word gateway drug kids in the same sentence, but it is that entry level, even though it's incredibly powerful, you know, it's how people get into it. So I think there's a lot to be said in that. And obviously OpenAI, just to bring that up again, the native modules are now available now, aren't they, in Zapier, in Make, you know, they're making sure that that's available to play around with. Yeah, I did see one the other day, which is quite interesting, which was creating programmatic pages, SEO optimized pages. I think it was Matthew from WhaleSync doing this one, where you would create, you know, as many pages as you want using OpenAI, using Airtable, using automation. It just blends it all together and spits out, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of pages to promote whatever it is that your site is doing. And it's, as Matthew was saying on that video, that used to take weeks, months, long time anyway, and now you can do it in 20 minutes. So it's a really, really interesting year, this one. Can't wait to get started with it.
Yeah, and that makes you wonder about the future of like Google and all the search engines, because we're going to be Googling stuff and just getting AI generated pages for everything. Whereas you can just go straight to AI, ChatGPT, and ask it a question, and it'll probably have a better answer anyway. So, I don't know.
I think Google has quite a big problem on its hands at the moment in, you know, their whole business model may be about to be completely disrupted by AI unless they're working on something completely secret. But yeah, why would you use Google when you have to go to a website? Half of the websites are spam, the top ones, and you're then searching through a web page to find the answer to a question when it could just answer you directly. So it is going to be super interesting. I mean, I have seen some anecdotal stuff around recently about Google trying to detect AI created content and to downrank it, because I think they don't want their search results to be filled up with ChatGPT generated blog posts, basically, that aren't, you know, don't deliver new information. Everything in this area just feels like it's moving so fast now. It does feel like the rock is rolling down the hill, and it's getting faster and faster with this AI stuff. I mean, it's exciting and a bit frightening as well, because you don't know, you know, where this is going to end. But it's exciting as well. It's like, if you want to start building something, do it now.
Totally that. That's fantastic. So anything else from you guys before we wrap up? I'm aware of our time today. Don't want to go on too long, but...
No, all good. Just, yeah, excited to see what next year brings. I don't know if we should set some goals or something, but perhaps we'll do that in the first podcast of next year and set some goals for the end of the year for ourselves.
Good thinking.
Try and hold each other to them.
Definitely. And, you know, probably one of my New Year's resolutions is I feel I'm going all in on the no code community, the tools, my app. I'm going to be, you know, 100% focused on that next year, as, you know, it really does feel like this is it's a turning point, and stuff is changing faster and faster, and it's an exciting time to get involved with it. So I'm going to be doing as much as I can to make content like this, or write blog posts and tutorials, and just sharing more about the journey. All we want to do is get more people involved with it and really understand what you can do, what you can build with no code. So yeah, let's see how many new people we can get building next year.
And we've brought up community a couple of times. Kieran's mentioned an idea for community. You know, I have one as well, slightly different ideas. And I think there's just so much room for these almost specialist communities, that people of a like mind, or maybe centering around certain tools or SaaS or whatever it might be, and there's lots of room for that next year. So I think if we can find the time to launch our ideas, we really should, Kieran. Maybe we'll hold each other to that one. Mm-hmm. Join each other's communities and make sure that, you know, they're working. But yeah, I think that's one of the best ways that we can actually contribute something, is be somebody who coordinates groups, you know, bringing people together into a space and actually channeling everybody's energies and just learn together and share stuff together. Because Twitter's great, but as we've seen, even something like Twitter can feel a bit vulnerable sometimes. Lots of people saying they're going to leave and do this and do that. So, communities are a little bit more like a walled garden where you've got a little bit more control. And I like that idea very much going into the new year. So watch this space for those. Are you going to do one as well, James? Should we have three communities launched in the new year?
Yeah, and we could give a little shout out for the event that we're doing this evening. So we're doing a very early pilot of a in-person meetup, super informal, here in London. And, you know, I think it's something that, you know, people seem to want. So maybe we can do more of that next year as well, and actually trying to get us to meet up in person, because, you know, I love meeting people who in the community, you know, in real life, and learning off each other. So I'd hope we can build on tonight's event. Hopefully it's going to be good and we can do more of those next year. But yeah, that's something we'd love to hear from you guys on as well, if you would like to see more in-person stuff, because I really enjoy it.
Yeah, great shout. In real life events, we don't talk enough about that, but we're meeting people tonight that perhaps we've never met before, like ourselves. Never met before, and that is just, it's incredible that you can do that and get to know somebody so well. Like, we already know each other really well. And when you come together, it's like, are you sure we've never met before? That doesn't feel right. Yeah, I love that idea of more in real life, in-person events too. Cool. All right, guys. Should we wrap that up?
Yeah.
Wrap up 2022. And we'll see everybody in the new year. Keep your questions coming. Any ideas that you want us to talk about? We're also looking for people to interview, I think we said at one point as well. So anybody that wants to put their hand up and might want to come on the show, by all means, we'd entertain that. And yeah, have a good Christmas, everybody, and we'll see you in the new year.
See you next year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.